the late 80s, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television, and to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, welcome to Pat Trek, Season 2. This is the show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Winninger, to Star Trek The Next Generation, which is a show I've never seen.
And I have seen it a ton of times, and we're back with Season 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot has changed since Season 1.
Well, yeah, I've noticed a few differences.
Mm-hmm. Not better script writing.
No, we're still in the heart of the WGA strike of 1988.
Yep.
So we've definitely seen how that has affected the writing.
Oh, boy. Yeah. This episode, Max brought it up on our last episode about Next Gen. We did do that Beyond break in the middle.
Yeah.
That this is a real stinker, and he's not wrong.
Yeah, we're talking about first episode of Season 2, The Child.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Patrick.
It's just not very good.
It's similar to The Battle for me, where not enough happens in the episode to keep me interested.
I didn't hate The Battle as much as you, but it's just, it's boring. Like, Skin of Evil was bad, and Code of Honor was bad, but they were bad in a way that I just couldn't believe what I was watching. This was just kind of there, and it was dumb.
Right, especially for how much new stuff they introduced.
Oh, yeah.
And so let's get into that, the differences between Season 1 and Season 2. This is my production fact of the
week.
But this is the first time we go to 10 forward.
That's the bar.
That's the bar, right? And they act like it's been there the whole time.
Right, we've never seen anyone there.
Yeah, and we get to meet Whoopi Goldberg's character, Guinan.
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg, who is a huge star at this point.
Right, but it turns out that she was a big fan of the show.
That's true, she was.
And also friends with LeVar Burton. So she asked Gene Roddenberry if she could have a reoccurring role. She becomes a great character as the series progresses.
Yeah, she's a really good actress.
Yeah. I love her. She's never quite as featured as like the main cast, but when she shows up,
she's
she does
like
a great
a supporting
job.
Role.
Yeah, definitely. In a few episodes, she's the main role, but for the most part throughout the series, she's not. Hmm. Another big change is Beverly Crusher's gone.
So she's gone for the whole season.
Yeah, all of Season 2. She comes back in Season 3, spoiler alert. But yeah, in Season 2, she is gone, and she is replaced by Catherine Pulaski.
Who's the new ship doctor.
Right.
You were telling me that Gates McFadden either like got another job or got out of her contract or something.
Yeah, she didn't like the way Beverly Crusher was written. Felt like the character had no teeth.
I don't blame her.
No, not at all.
Season 1, there's a lot of issues.
And you'll see with Pulaski, they overcompensate a little bit.
Oh, they try to make her even colder.
Yes, and if I recall correctly, and I don't have these notes in front of me, but she wasn't well-received by the audience or by her fellow castmates.
Oh.
Yeah. So she doesn't make it very long, but we get to meet her today, and I think she does a good job in this episode.
Yeah, it's definitely different from Beverly Crusher. Mm-hmm. It has a very different bedside manner.
Yes, absolutely.
As in a shitty one.
And she doesn't like Data.
No.
No, she does not.
Robo-bigoted.
And last but not least, and I think this is the most important thing, Riker has a beard now.
Yep. That's the Riker that I had always seen pictures of.
Yes. That's the Riker we know and love.
He keeps the beard for the rest of the series?
Yep, he does. Well, and I guess it really isn't last, because we can also talk about Worf and Geordi really quickly. They've both changed their uniform color.
Yeah, engineering, right? Yeah. That's yellow?
Yeah, and security. So operations.
Okay.
And LeVar Burton is now chief of engineering, where he belongs.
Where he probably belongs.
Because they kept cycling through all these engineers.
And the uniforms are different, too.
Yes.
They're like two-piece, they got a zipper.
Yes, exactly. They're a lot more comfortable for the cast.
Yeah.
That was the big complaint, is those old uniforms were not comfortable
at all. One pieces,
They look kind of weird. They're jumpsuits, whereas they're no longer in jumpsuits. They still look the same as far as colors and layout are concerned, but not the same material. And not quite as tight-fitting as they once were.
Yeah. It doesn't really seem to make sense that they designed them that way in the first place.
Well, you know, you need a whole season to figure that out, I suppose.
So I've got Patrick's log here of what was happening the week that the first episode of season two came out, which was November 21st, 1988. As we said, the WGA strike was still going on. That was the longest strike action for the WGA. I think it was 155 days. Mm-hmm. They were fighting over residuals.
Right. And this script was originally written for Star Trek Phase 2, and they tried to adapt it. So, Patrick, Star Trek Phase 2...
I don't know what that is.
That was going to be the reboot of Star Trek with the original cast on television.
Oh, okay.
They turned it into Star Trek Motion Picture, ditched a bunch of scripts and stuff. All the actors got much more expensive, and later it became Star Trek The Next Generation. But for a long period of time there, Star Trek Phase 2 was in development.
Huh.
And this script was originally written for that, and they've repurposed it and changed it. As you can tell,
yeah,
it's got a lot of holes
and
gaps in it.
Trying to cut corners and costs and stuff.
Yeah, because they don't have...
The writers.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, a couple other interesting things that were happening this week. So a state court of Illinois rules that Chicago must elect a mayor by 1989. So what had happened was in November of 1988, Harold Washington died of a sudden heart attack. Harold Washington, RIP. And he still had 3.5 years left of his term. It was a very contentious time in Chicago. It was called the Council Wars, where there were a lot of mostly white aldermen that were opposed to Washington's progressive coalition. They ended up having this guy, Eugene Sawyer, who was Chicago's second black mayor, as acting alderman. So a state court said, oh, hey, guys, you actually have to elect someone instead of just letting the city council pick. And it ended up being Daley.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that I thought was interesting was Afghanistan is like constantly in the news here. And I always forget. It's just like, oh, yeah. Yeah, there was like constantly a war in Afghanistan, except at this point it was the Soviets. So it says Gorbachev urges UN-Afghan effort. Gandhi, who is head of India, Soviet leaders seek action to shape government in Kabul.
And wow.
So Gorbachev was mad that the U.S. was funding rebels in Afghanistan, who ended up, you know, being the precursor to the Taliban and
right.
Al-Qaeda. Gorbachev is trying to get the U.N. to support a Soviet-backed government in Kabul and also to get the Americans out of there, you know, supporting the Mujahideen. And it ended up pretty much going south for everybody.
Right.
Years later. So.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. How'd that turn out? Everything turned out fine there, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's all solved.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I was worried.
Yeah. Well, I am part Betazoid, so I can read minds, and I know everybody is comfortable and happy.
Speaking of Betazoids, we should probably get into the episode here. Yeah, it's... I was going to say flat out, I did not like this one.
You know, I love Star Trek. I think I've made that clear on this podcast.
That's why we're doing this show.
And, oh, boy, this one.
It's rough, man.
I like, even this recap, it's like, let's just get through it.
I don't see, like, it was 45 minutes. That's the most I can say about this episode. Like,
45 minutes of our lives. Watching nothing happen.
Nothing happened, despite so much weird stuff happening in this show.
Yeah, and they had so much to work with. Whoopi Goldberg just showed up.
Yeah.
We got 10 forward.
You had an Oscar-nominated actress.
Yeah.
Call your show and say, hey, I want to be on it.
Yeah.
And they just didn't do anything with her.
All she does is talk to Will Wheaton the whole time.
Yeah. That's like punishment.
Yeah. I know.
It just fell into their lap in the middle of the longest writer's strike up to that date.
Right.
And they're like, you're going to be a bartender.
Yeah, well, because they were repurposing an old script, so they didn't really have anything for her to do of any substance.
Well, it didn't work out. I don't know. It's just, I think I was telling you, like, I didn't know what the A-plot was.
Neither do
they
I.
They barely explained what the hell was going on.
It was a plasma plague.
I'm having a look at Memory Alpha to figure out what that is. And it was like, oh, so the Enterprise at the beginning, they're trying to rendezvous with this other ship. There's like, we get to see those cool little shuttles leaving. And
yeah, that was a new shot as well.
Yeah, we're just kind of like led through the ship to see all the stuff that's changed. Riker's got a beard, the uniforms are different, you know, right. That kind of stuff.
There's 10 forward, which always existed, but no one's ever been
to. No one's ever been to the bar in there. You know that, like, when Sonny Clemens showed up, that would have been where they took him.
They should have, if it actually
right.
existed.
They could
right.
have just left him there. He wouldn't have ever bothered anyone. He wouldn't have gone to like sexually harass all of the women on the ship.
Exactly. He would have had something to do. He would have been playing music in that bar.
Right.
But apparently it's always been there. And so is Whoopi.
Yeah.
So is Guinan. We should start calling Guinan. Her by her character.
Right. Name. Her character is Guinan. And yeah, these are people that we have apparently had on the ship for this whole time. We just didn't know.
Did I say Guinan?
Yeah.
Guinan.
It's Guinan, right?
Oh, boy.
You did. You did.
Guinan. I did say Guinan because that's an old video game.
Not, you said Ninja Gaiden?
Yes, exactly.
No, it's Guinan.
Guinan. Yeah, okay. Of course. Ugh.
All right.
Now I'm fired.
Okay. Yeah. Get off the show. I don't know how to work that soundboard, though, so this show's going to get a lot worse and not edited.
Yeah. Job security.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're taking us through all the new stuff that's on the ship. We go to Picard's ready room, and Geordi's like showing him this box that's like, yeah, this is a containment module. I don't really know what is being contained. I guess they had some conversation. It was like barely mentioned that there's this thing called plasma plague, and they're trying to carry specimens to this other system to research it, to try to develop an antidote.
So I imagine that's the A plot, right? Because
yeah.
That's how the episode starts.
It's barely mentioned, though. It's like just when they're in this ready room and like, LaForge and Riker comes in and they're talking to Picard about like
sweet chair sit from Riker.
Yeah, he does a leg sweep to the chair for no real reason.
He's got back pain.
That all right. I've come across that explanation so many times and it's just like,
well, it's a character trait now.
Yeah. Why would back pain have to cause you to sit like that?
I don't know. I don't know what part of sitting
triggers it. What part of it makes that difficult?
Yeah, I don't know.
There was a guy in college that we used to see running by just like, he was a little short guy, like 5 feet tall, and he would run by just like putting his top half of the body parallel with the ground and sticking his arms out. It was the weirdest thing in the world. And he kept saying, yeah, it just makes you run faster. It's like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It just looks weird. It's a weird affectation.
Well, it's a cool way for Riker to sit.
It does fit with his character, so I'll buy it. Anyway, he comes in, he does that weird leg sweep of the chair, and they're talking about this containment module that Geordi designed. Like, he just invented this thing to contain this plague. And it has to keep inside like 500 different pieces of this thing inside of a larger containment module to keep the plague from getting into the ship. And he's got to go replicate a bunch of that stuff so that they can take it to this other system and make an antidote. Because apparently like there's this plague all over the galaxy. It's real bad. And I guess that's the A plot. It is barely explained. Like this happens in the space of a minute.
Right. And we don't see enough about it. I never feel like there's any stakes to it at all.
There's no suspense to this whole thing. And then when, like, immediately the B-plot starts happening, because we see an exterior shot of the ship, and this little bead of light follows it.
Mm-hmm. Data recognizes an energy surge.
Yeah, and it's like, we see it following people on the ship, and they just, like, they see it, and they're like, no big deal.
Oh, that's strange. Boop-a-doop-a-doop.
Yeah. Once again, the security on this ship.
Horrible.
Yeah, what is happening? Always slacking. And yeah, it impregnates Counselor Troi while she's sleeping.
Right, which is a very awkward scene.
It's a very awkward scene.
She was having a very fantastical dream.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, oof.
Yep, and then all of a sudden, just Immaculate Conception.
Yeah.
Immaculate Conception is a conception of Mary. This would be virgin birth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there's a virgin birth just happens.
She knows right away, too.
Yeah, what it is. Like, within the first 5 minutes of the show, there's just, there's a Jesus plot now. By the way, I don't think this is going to come up ever again, is it?
I don't
think so. It's not going to just, like, be
if
brought
we're
up.
Lucky,
hey,
it never comes up.
You remember, Troi, when you had a son for 36 hours?
Yeah, I'm sure it's referenced quickly.
Right.
As fan service, but it's never a major thing.
This is just a one-off. Yeah. Her having a kid.
Well, her body bounces completely back to normal. They say that.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, her.
It's like her body never had
state.
A kid. I know. Well, and she's so attached to this alien kid. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
It's her kid. Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about that at the end. It's really weird. But yeah, so she gets impregnated by a bead of light.
Yes.
So we see that happen on screen. It is very uncomfortable and strange. But this is where we see the new chief medical officer, Dr. Pulaski. I'm not sure if they really explain where Crusher is.
They do. Okay. So Crusher just took a job as the chief medical officer of Starfleet. So she's positioned on a base somewhere. I don't remember where they say it is, but she's no longer... it's kind of like when you get promoted to admiral. You know, you're no longer out in the field.
Oh, like
she's
okay.
doing research. She's doing research somewhere on a base.
Yeah. Okay. So Picard has to go meet with her because she hasn't checked in with him.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell her, oh, yeah, she's already found 10 forward.
Yeah.
Which they know what it is, so it has been there this whole time.
Exactly. I think that's the funniest thing of this whole episode.
Oh, she's at 10 forward.
Oh, horrible way to meet the captain.
Yeah.
It's like, what's 10 forward?
I don't know what that is. And so he decides to go down to that bar. On the turbo lift, he's talking to Wesley. Wesley is temporarily on the Enterprise and will have to go to meet his mother.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to leave the ship, though.
Obviously.
Yeah.
He's got reservations about it because being on the Enterprise is one of the greatest things of his life.
Well, yeah, he's got a new uniform. He's at the helm. He's doing stuff there.
Yeah.
It seems to be of use now.
Yeah, he's taking over Geordi's position.
Right.
Because Geordi's now in engineering, yeah.
They just let a kid do that.
Poor Geordi. Geordi must have been doing such an easy job for a long time.
He just invented a dang like containment unit for a space plague.
Yeah.
And a kid took over his last job. I'd feel pretty insulted, honestly.
Like, oh my gosh. Yeah. What did I go to Starfleet Academy for? This kid can't even get in.
Yeah. So there's like this awkward conversation in the turbo lift, and he's trying to comfort him with, you know, look, Starfleet, you got to move around, where they say you got to move around. It sucks, but...
Picard is exceptionally awkward in this scene, too. He won't make eye contact with Wesley.
Well, he's bad with kids. He's bad at emotion in general.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing he does connect with is that Wesley tells him, yeah, but the Enterprise, it's different. Like, it's a different ship. And he's like, ah, yes, that she is, or something. And he walks off, and he goes into the 10 forward lounge. This is where we see Guinan for the first time.
Ninja Guinan,
who is Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
Which I totally forgot she was in this show.
Yeah, and again, she's great in this show.
And in 1988, like this, again, I can't stress, like that would be a big deal.
Right.
Color Purple had come out a couple years earlier. Like, she was an up-and-coming actress.
Was Ghost out yet? Or
Ghost
was
that
on
1990.
The horizon? Oh, okay.
So that would be 2 years later.
Okay.
But yeah, she was a big star.
Yeah.
And
a great comedian?
Right.
Yeah.
And then she just has like this bit part. Is like, oh yeah, I want to be the bartender.
Yep.
So
especially in this episode.
Yeah. She really does nothing. Guinan leads Picard to where Pulaski is. Picard's like lecturing her or something. And then she just interrupts him. Is like, oh, you need to listen to what Troy is saying. Because it turns out Pulaski has met Troy in the lounge. That's why she's there. Troy has some news. So Picard listens, and everyone gathers into the conference room to watch this little presentation by Pulaski.
Yeah, which this scene is horribly dated,
Jesus.
In my opinion. They're talking about whether or not they can abort this Immaculate Conception. Is that what this is?
I don't know. Yes, it's
some energy source entered this woman, and now she's pregnant, and they're debating whether or not she can keep the baby.
Right.
And Riker gets super jealous.
Yeah.
But everybody is out of line here.
Yeah.
Literally everybody is
out
of line.
We just, like, kind of see and hear Troy's thoughts while she's thinking about the baby, and finally she's just like, oh, by the way, I'm keeping it. Thanks for asking.
Right. Nobody even turns
no one
to her.
Asked her.
All like, the men start talking right away about what they should do with this child.
Yeah.
To the show's credit, as soon as she says, I'm keeping it,
they're
Picard
like, oh,
does
yeah.
go,
oh.
Okay, well, it's settled then. But somebody should have asked her what she wanted first. And then brought up concerns. I think it's okay to bring up, like, hey, you don't know where this baby came from.
Yeah. Are you okay?
Yeah, exactly.
But it was just like the first question was right, who's the father?
Yeah, he got super
kick his
jealous.
Ass.
Yeah, so jealous.
I got a beard now. But yeah, Riker's being a dick. But one of the other things that we learn about this fetus is that it is rapidly developing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like at 36 weeks and it's only been a few hours.
Right, like a day.
Yeah.
She would have been pregnant 11 hours ago.
Yes.
According to Pulaski.
So if it continues at this pace, she is going to give birth in a little over a day, which is crazy because she knows that it was this little point of light that impregnated her. It wasn't a person.
Does she know it's a point of light?
Well, she knows that it, you know, it wasn't anybody.
Right.
You know, it just kind of showed up. And it is rapidly developing.
Lucky for her, she's not in a relationship right now. Or that would have been really
confusing. That would have been really... Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what was the conversation between Mary and Joseph? You know?
Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Riker is, you know, being Riker. Worf is, I don't know, he's just kind of grunting. And all this time, finally, Troy says, yeah, look, I'm going to keep this baby.
Worf wants the baby aborted.
Yes.
He makes that very clear.
Right. I don't know what he doesn't know what it is, and it could be like some kind of.
But he's wrong because he's Worf.
Yeah. Once again, Worf is making the wrong decision in the worst way possible. So once Troy makes her wishes clear, Picard says the discussion is over. Then hours later, Enterprise arrives at this research station to pick up the plasma plague. So that thing that they were building the containment unit for.
Which you can just pick up a plague. Like, I do not understand what's going on with this plague.
They're like
all.
Talking to this guy in a beekeeper's outfit who's a doctor apparently, and you know, they're talking about transferring the plague. It's a super boring conversation. I don't know why this was in this.
It was to tell us how threatening it would be.
Yeah, they were trying to raise the stakes. It felt pretty artificial. It's like, no one gives a shit about this thing.
No.
Like it.
And also, the
it's
solution.
It's the MacGuffin that is going to kill everybody, but like we're never going to see it again.
Right.
I'm already like freaked out by the B plot. Or whatever the A, maybe it's the A plot.
The other plot.
The other. The main part of the plot, which is this virgin birth that's happening. So what they're trying to get to the audience is that this is a time issue because they really need to research this plague to get a vaccine. And if it gets out, it can kill everybody. Mm-hmm. So watch out for that.
Right. And this lieutenant, I'm sorry, I don't recall his name, but this lieutenant is very much into inspecting everything and making sure everything is super safe.
Yeah.
So it delays everything later.
Yeah, and this guy's on the ship now. Like, he's there for the rest of the episode. He's hanging out next to the deadly virus that they have contained.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I guess, his job.
To watch this container.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't want to permit any kind of transfer or anything until he's assured that there is zero growth of the virus.
Yeah, because I guess if the virus grows too much, it's going to
expand and break out and kill everyone on the ship.
Okay.
So that's what's at stake, but it took me having to read a summary of it again to figure out what was going on.
Because I was like, I did not understand.
Clearly, yeah, because they had the writer's strike. The people whose job it was to do this were not there. They couldn't be there because they weren't getting paid, and that's why they went on strike. And then we had like some guy that wrote a spec script. I just got to see his stuff on TV.
Exactly. Well, no, it was like a pilot script.
Oh, okay.
But
they just had like...
Laying around. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't really clearly portrayed in the show, but that's what was happening.
Okay.
There's a virus. It was going to kill everybody. This doctor has to make sure that it's not going to grow, and him and Geordi are hanging out by the cargo bay where they're keeping it.
Yeah.
So, and by this point, Troy is visibly pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
She's about to go into labor.
Fun fact.
What?
The pregnancy stuff was a bag of rice.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good job. Pretty good costuming.
It looked good. She did a great job
portraying
it. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like immediately going into labor. It's really weird. Like Data just like runs into her and she's like, oh, I'm having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And they like go to the sick bay. Data has to call for security. And Dr. Pulaski's like, oh, I don't really know why we need security. And he's like, well, you know, it's a space baby. You kind of never know with these things.
We've had a whole season of shenanigans.
Right. We don't want to risk anything again.
Pulaski also shows here her dislike of Data.
Yeah, she's like, oh, she needs a human touch. And Data's like, you know, I'm kind of basically a person.
I have feelings,
right.
Sort of. Yeah, and Deanna Troi says Data would be perfect.
Right, yeah. And so he's giving emotional support to Troy, but also asking her all these questions about what it's like to have a baby and if it has like consciousness and if it's aware of her. And then finally she's like, shut up, I'm having a baby.
So to me, this is one of the best scenes, I think, of the entire episode, because Data is pursuing his quest to become more human or more alive. And he's trying to understand, at what point do you feel connected to your child? Which I think, you know, Patrick, neither you nor I have children. And that's something as a potential future father I'm always curious about, is when do you start to feel like a parent?
Yeah.
And he was asking questions like that, which I thought were humorous and fun. Mm-hmm. And probably, again, the best part of this entire episode.
Yeah. But she interrupts
but
all of that.
The episode continues.
But yeah, this terrible episode keeps keeps chugging along. And it interrupts this nice little scene because, well, Troy is having this baby. She has a baby pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the gestation of this child, he just kind of goes right into the world.
Yeah. With almost no pain.
Right. Yeah, no pain. And Dr. Pulaski is like asking, oh, do betazoids have such easy births? That was the other thing, is the kid is half betazoid, half human, exactly like right. Deanna Troi.
Which wouldn't make sense.
No.
Unless
the father was
half human,
half betazoid as well. So it just like copied her genes or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a boy, by the way.
Could you clone a woman to make a boy? I don't know chromosomes.
Well, I don't know. You could like a twin.
Yeah.
I guess.
Wait, no, a male is XY, a female is XX, yeah. Right? So you couldn't make a boy. Like, this is completely flawed.
Yeah.
Because there's no Y chromosome.
It should have been a girl.
Yeah, it had to be a girl.
But they were trying to do the Jesus thing.
I don't know.
Because he sacrifices himself at the end. We'll get to that.
Yeah. But
everything about this episode is extremely dumb.
Yeah, but it would have had to have been a girl.
Yeah.
She only has X chromosomes, unless betazoids are different. Internet, tell me whether or not that's true.
Internet, tell us how babies work. Where do they come from?
I do love the line here, too. So, again, this is my favorite scene of the entire episode when Pulaski asks her, are all betazoid births
yeah,
like
the
this?
Easy births.
Are they all easy? Deanna goes, not if you ask my mother, which, again, great joke.
Yeah.
Great joke.
As you know, Pat, my wife is a labor and delivery nurse,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes births are pretty easy. Not for first ones, generally, from what I hear.
Right, so my...
It's pretty difficult for that.
Right.
Which this was Troy's first birth.
So it would have been really hard.
Would have been pretty tough.
Yeah. Because my mom had four children, and every time her labor got shorter and shorter, and mm-hmm. she said you got kind of used to it.
Yeah.
She's like, it was still painful, but by the end, it was, you know, she knew what she was doing.
Yeah. But yeah, first births can be pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
But it's remarkable that this one wasn't. So the kid just... kind of fell and right
it,
out.
It raises a couple of eyebrows.
Yes, yep. It is. People are concerned. But there's a really touching moment between mother and child. Like, she really does feel like this is their child. Mm-hmm. You know, Riker comes by and kisses her on the cheek. You know, everyone is...
He was creeping in the shadows. He's
been creeping in the shadows the whole time. And then she names the kid Ian Andrew, which is her father. And her father was human, right?
Yes.
Okay. So Ian is the baby. Later on, just like... almost, I think nothing really happens in between this, and then the captain gets asked to go check on the kid.
Right.
And he's a boy, like a four-year-old boy.
Yeah, he's a child now. He's not a baby anymore.
Right.
Which, he says he's going to go pay his respects, which I think you do when someone dies, not when they have a child.
Yeah, not when they have a kid. But,
you know, Picard hates kids.
Yeah, what would he know? So he goes to go check on the baby after, like right after it's born.
Right.
And they go to Troy's room, and there's, like, a kid with a full head of hair. He's walking upright, and he says, hello, Captain. He's, like, able to speak. This is super creepy.
Yeah, way creepy.
Yeah, because this is only, like, a few hours after the birth. The other thing that the other thing Pulaski notes is that Troy is fully healed, as if she had never had a baby.
Right.
Immediately after having a baby.
Right.
Which does not happen.
No. We could ask your wife about that.
Yeah, or anyone that has ever had a baby. So, yeah, ask your mom how long it took to recover.
Yeah.
Takes a while.
It was not instantaneous. And then the kid was not suddenly four years old.
You were not suddenly 4 years old after you were born. This is an extraordinary thing that has happened.
So does this hook you at all?
No.
No, same here.
Because, you know, they set it up. Way before they telegraphed, it's like, yeah, this kid's gonna go through some kind of like Jack syndrome where he's just gonna constantly get older,
yeah,
way faster than everyone. And yeah, so that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
He's 4 years old now. It's creepy, but there's nothing really. I don't feel any stakes. Like, I don't know what the hell is happening.
Yeah, this whole episode.
They never
so
explain
pointless.
What is happening
no,
either.
The kid's just getting old quickly.
Right.
And Deanna Troi's really connected.
Yeah.
I think that's the two big takeaways
from
most of the scenes.
Meanwhile, where they're keeping the plague and that containment unit, it's advancing. The plague is like kind of going through this new state. Something is affecting it to make it grow.
Yeah.
So the doctor that came in to monitor it, he's really worried. Geordi is worried. If this thing gets out, it could threaten the entire ship. It could threaten life on the entire ship. And they can't figure out what's going on.
Yeah, and we find out from Pulaski that if it got out, it would be an hour before the entire ship was infected.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's
okay,
what she
says
at one point. Yeah, it's after that scene she has with Data, and she calls him Data, and Data gets kind of offended. That's what the whole point of that scene is.
Oh.
Is them doing an analysis of how long it would take to get infected.
Oh, okay.
But then they have this nice little character moment. Again, that was a pretty sweet spot as well, where Pulaski is telling Data, you know, calling him the wrong name and then shocked that he has emotional response to it.
Okay, yeah. So I should get into that. So before they kind of solve the issue of the plague spreading around, there is a scene in Pulaski's office where they're trying to look over, study this plague issue.
Yeah, plasma plague.
Plasma plague. And Data's working on this console. Pulaski's working on this console. And she calls him Data and asks him to, like, hand something to her. And he's like, yeah. My name is Data, by the way.
Right.
And she says, well, what difference does it make? He's like, well, Data's my name. And then she, like, studies him. And it's like, I didn't know you could have hurt feelings and all this stuff. And it's like, she's just being a dick to him.
She is being very rude.
For no reason.
I love how he says that, too. Well, Data's my name. Right. Data is not.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. I think it's fair.
But one of the things that they find, though, in this scene is that she discovers some genome or something or some protein that was designed by some overeager, she calls it an eager beaver genetic scientist.
Right.
Something that was just a solution looking for a problem. And I think that's what the plague ended up being.
Right. So people trying to solve the plague have made it worse over the years.
Yeah.
Is what we're supposed to take from that.
So, yeah. Then we go to see Ian in preschool.
Yeah,
he's playing with these adorable golden retriever puppies.
Yep, who are all dead now.
Who? Yes, thank you, thank you for reminding us that all of the puppies in this episode are now dead.
They would be. They're just
also the dog in the Fetch Ubu Fetch production identification. That dog is also dead. Benji is dead.
Dog's only
Rin Tin Tin from the 90s is also dead.
Sorry, I just thought it was funny. We saw them as all puppies.
Yeah, that was like the first thing you said. It's like, yeah, Pat, all those dogs are dead, by the way. Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
All these cute puppies.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. But it was a boring episode.
Yeah, I know. Got to pass the time somehow. But then, like, Ian's playing with the puppies. He gets up, and he's immediately, like, 6 inches taller.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it freaks everyone out. And then later, Picard goes to, like, visit Troy, I guess, in her room. They're serving dinner. And Ian shoves his hand into a hot bowl of soup and is, like, surprised that he's burning. And Dr. Pulaski's also there, and she's, like, trying to heal his hand. And Troy's comforting him. And then Ian is like, my face is wet.
Yeah. And he's learning what it is to have emotion.
Yes. So Pulaski pulls Picard aside and says he shoved his hand in there on purpose. Like, he was trying to figure out what would happen. And they don't know what his deal is. Like, Picard just asks him, why are you here? As if he would know. Or that would be a normal thing you would think to ask a child.
God, and this is where this episode, for me, it was already pretty...
Yeah, and of course, Ian has no idea what this means. But he tells him, I can't tell you yet.
Yeah, what the hell?
What is that?
So he does know why he's there. He's not a child anymore. He's an alien of some sort.
So they explain this by saying, it's like, oh, his cognitive function can't really grasp to tell you what's happening, but he knows what's happening.
Eye roll. That's what I'm doing now. My eyes are rolling.
It's a dumb explanation.
If he's aware enough to say, I can't tell you right now, he's aware enough to tell you something.
At least some inkling of why he's there, right? Yeah.
But no. It's just bad writing.
Yeah. He never tells you either.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
It is never fully explained. Remember, there's this other plot of Wesley. He doesn't want to leave the Enterprise. He has to go see his mother, but he wants to stay on the ship because he feels like he has a purpose. So he's kind of staring out the window in 10 Forward, which is the lounge.
Mm-hmm. We'll spend a lot more time there in the future.
Yeah. They've got these weird three-dimensional chess pieces there. Yep. People are drinking all sorts of weird concoctions.
Yeah, it's a lot of Gatorade Frost.
Oh, is that what that is?
Well, that's what it looks
like. That's what it looks like. One of the, like, weird flavors of Powerade that never caught on.
Yeah, exactly.
Wesley's there. He's expected to join Starfleet Medical. He doesn't want to. And Guinan comes over and talks to him. And Guinan is apparently hundreds of years old. She's not human. Even though she appears to be human, she's some other alien race.
They don't really explain that in this episode. But yes.
They kind of hint at it because Wesley asked her, is it true that you're thousands of years old.
You were with Picard in the past, and right. Yeah, your history seems a little blurry, which is so weird because they're acting like she's been there the whole time, and we're just getting introduced to her. But then they have to spend some time of Wesley's dialogue explaining why this character exists,
and it's not done well.
No, it's they're just super
like
clunky.
It's just like Wesley's like, "You're such an interesting character, Guinan.
Please tell me, Guinan, why are you here?"
Right. And she's...
How long have you known Picard?
Which doesn't make sense because, like, she is serving an actual purpose here. She's a bartender. She's trying to, like, pick the brain of one of her customers and console them because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about, you know, he doesn't want to leave the Enterprise. He thinks it's best for him to stay here, but he's part of Starfleet, and it's his duty to do whatever Starfleet sends him. And she says, you know what? Sometimes you got to do what's best for you, which is good advice.
It is good advice.
So he leaves.
Especially a person that age.
Right. After, you know, shoehorning in that awkward dialogue, it was just like, oh, Guinan, this is who you are.
Yeah.
Is this true that this is who you are?
Here's some character definition.
Right. Yeah. Then he leaves and, you know, solidified in this idea that he's going to stay on the Enterprise. Apparently, he can have some input into this decision?
No. He's got to make an effort to stay.
Oh, okay.
Which he does.
Later. All right, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
I didn't know that he could, like, have any impact on where he's sent. Like, I thought you just got assigned places, right?
No. That has been proven not to be true, or Captain Picard would be an admiral by now.
Oh, yeah.
They apparently
would have been forced to.
Yeah, they get to decide their futures a bit more than in the military today.
Oh, well, he meets with Picard and requests to stay. So he submits a request, and Picard doesn't decide right away. He can't really have all of that on him. And also, it's a kid on the ship.
Right. With no parents.
Right, with no parents. He doesn't want to be responsible for all this stuff. And eventually, you know, he's like, all right, well, I guess Data can help you study. And you can
cut into the end, but yeah.
Well, yeah,
they have a very corny scene at the end.
Yeah, I'll save that for later. But meanwhile, remember we got that plasma plague going on,
and it's getting worse.
It's getting worse.
Oh boy,
Dr. Pulaski comes down to check, see what's happening.
She confirms it's getting worse.
She confirms yes, it is growing. Riker's there. He's like, "All right, well, we got to jettison it." And the doctor that is monitoring the thing is like, you can't do that because then some other ship will come into contact with it. It could land on a planet. This whole thing could spread across the galaxy. Yeah. It'd be real bad. Yeah. We have to solve this problem right here and now. Geordi recommends to Captain Picard, hey, if this gets out of hand, we got to separate the saucer from the rest and we'll deal with it here.
Right.
Assuming, I'm like, oh, well then everyone there will die.
Yeah.
On the neck part of the ship.
So it's all, all non-essential personnel were... To move to
we'll
the,
have to risk their lives dealing with this thing.
No, the essential personnel would.
Oh, the essential personnel
but
would.
But non-essential would go to the saucer, and they'd break it off and separate as soon as it became a problem.
But one of the things that Dr. Pulaski notices is that there is some kind of radiation that's causing...
Yeah, which is not very well
the
explained.
...the plague to grow.
Yeah, and it suddenly shows up.
Yes. And the doctor that is monitoring the plague, he notices it too. He's like, well, this can only come from this kind of gadget. And... Geordi's like, well, we don't have that gadget on this ship. Where is this radiation coming from? I wonder what thing that was recently introduced to the ship could possibly be emitting some kind of strange radiation. So it cuts to Troy and Ian in their room. Ian is being tucked in for bed. He's calling Troy mommy and all this cute stuff. And then he's like saying, I'm a danger to the ship. I have to go.
People are scared of me.
People, yeah.
It's my fault.
Yep. And it is. Like, he is the source of the radiation that's making this thing grow. He doesn't know that.
But now he does know that.
But now he does know that. And he dies. He just chooses to die.
Yeah, he just dies right there.
Right in front of his mom. And, like, she calls Dr. Pulaski in. She tries to hit the make him better button. It doesn't work. And he dies. Ian's dead.
Ugh.
Kid died on screen in front of his mom.
Yeah. Very quickly,
yeah,
too.
A kid we just met.
Yeah, it just kind of turned off.
Yep.
And is dead.
He just shut down, and he's dead.
Yeah. But the best part...
Oh, God.
...is that he doesn't remain in his physical form very long.
No. He turns back into a little speck of light.
And flies into,
he flies
Deanna
into Troy's hands.
What are we watching?
I remember, it's like when we were watching this, I was like, what the hell is this?
This is so stupid. And then, it's glowing in her hands, and tells her something we don't know because it's just light being emitted.
Yep.
And then it leaves the ship.
It leaves the ship.
I love this show.
Yeah. It makes no sense. And I think like Troy does say something just like, yeah, it was just a, it thanked me for the experience of getting to be my son.
It wanted to know what it was like to be on the ship.
Right. It was some kind of energy life form that wanted to know what it was like to be human or half human, half betazoid.
Yes.
And
now it knows that.
Right.
And it left.
Seated at the right hand of the Father. I don't begotten, know. Not made. One being with the...
I'm pretty sure Patrick and my snickering right now is not great listening.
True God from True God. Through him all things are made.
It's just like, what the
It's
hell?
Just like a, such a ham-fisted Christ narrative
and
that lasted for half an episode.
And had no didn't do anything.
No.
Nothing happened, but it just, but it just got
and
older.
Died.
Yes.
What?
I know. What?
There's no reason that that needs to be here.
No. This episode doesn't need to exist except to introduce Ten Forward and Whoopi Goldberg.
Right, but now there's like a one-off episode where Troy has had a kid and had it die in front of her in the space of a day. Like, that is a thing that will emotionally scar her for the rest of her life.
No, she does okay.
Oh, of course. It's never... no, I'm saying... But it's a one-off, so it's never going to be brought up again.
Never.
That this happened.
No.
Even though this is like a watershed moment in her life.
Yeah.
It is the... If you're going to do, like, some Christ narrative thing, like, maybe do it with a minor character you're not going to have to mess around with.
Or give that character who dies some sort of real sacrifice.
Right. He I just mean, realized that he was...
Ian just passed out in the bed and was dead.
Yeah. He just realized that his radiation from his body was, like, causing this plague to multiply. So he was like, oh, time to turn off. I'm so back to a beam bad. Of light. I didn't really die, but, you know, I'll see you later.
I was not really your kid this whole time either.
I mean, he kind of was.
Kind of, I guess.
It was just really
good. It was the physical embodiment of this energy source.
Okay, well, see, now we're going to get into a theological argument that has been happening for centuries.
Okay, fair enough. Like, what's the
soul?
Was
he purely divine and just man, or was he all man and partly divine?
I don't know.
Are we
going to
get
thing,
into some heresies
we saw
here?
It flew, we saw it fly out the window.
Well, see, now that's the Miaphysite here.
Oh,
see,
God.
That he is
Patrick, you know a lot
purely
more about
divine.
This stuff than I do. I don't know. It was so stupid.
Yeah, no, it's just a really dumb episode of Star
oh
Trek,
my God.
Man.
It was so bad.
Well, I should probably get to the end. so, yeah, Picard...
Yeah, that's not the end!
Yeah, it doesn't end at this point for some reason. It tries to cap off with, like, the most meaningless episode, like, ending of the episode. The thing that we already know, yes, Wesley stayed on the Enterprise. Picard arranges his studies to be completed under Data. Not Data. And... Worf is like going to help raise him too.
So is Riker is going to help him
Riker's,
learn how to be a man?
I know, yeah.
It's
pick
like,
someone else.
Ooh.
Pick someone else, Wes.
A skis ball, yeah. Maybe?
This is how you seduce a woman with the trombone, Wesley.
Here's how you sit and cry in a desert.
In a sad desert, yeah. So he's going to stay on the ship, I guess.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Because he didn't quit the show.
Right.
Right.
So, but he's going to, you know, be in contact with his mom over at Starfleet Medical and... They send regards to her, and it ends with Wesley Crusher taking his place at the helm, where Geordi LaForge
used
to
be.
Now he's chief engineer, and Picard sends some order to go, I guess, carry this plague thing to the planet where they're supposed to go, and that's how the episode ends.
Yeah, they beam it out of there.
Oh.
They'd already beamed it out.
That's right. So they'd already
yeah,
beamed
but
it out. They're heading
good.
Off somewhere else.
Yeah,
and,
everything's
you know,
all good.
Wesley is the guy in charge of navigation
driving.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Patrick. This is a part of the episode where
I think
we
you
like
know what
to
I'm
rate.
Say.
If we loved it, thought it was an episode that you must watch. It's crucial.
Oh.
We set it to kill.
Oh.
If it was okay, it comes up in the queue. We set to stun.
Yeah,
you know, you watch it
right
if it's on.
Yeah.
If we thought it's horrible, avoid it
just
at all
awful.
Costs. No reason to watch it.
Yeah.
We leave it in the holster.
Burn it if you can.
Yeah, Patrick, what did you think?
Leave it in the holster.
Oh, really? Shocked.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, mainly just because they keep screwing up Troy. They have this important milestone in her life introduced as just a one-off episode that will have no ramifications, no impact on her character for the rest of the series, and it didn't make any sense. What is this kid? What? Why is he here? They never answered that question. Why are you here? They just kind of like mumbled, like, oh yeah, he was here to study humans, and he was a beam of light, and now he's back to he's from the beam of light planet, and that's why he was here. That's never explained.
Never.
Pick any other plot but this.
Yes, Patrick. I think you're gonna know what I'm gonna say. I completely agree with you.
Thank God.
No, I was gonna set it to kill. No way. You know, this is one of those times where I felt bad making you watch this episode because I'd already seen it. And in my mind, I was like, gosh, I can't wait till we get past this because season two has some amazing stuff. But it's almost like we're back to the beginning of season one where everyone just forgot what's going on and how to write a decent episode. It boggles my mind how disjointed and boring this episode is.
Yep.
I would never recommend it to anybody, and don't recommend watching the whole thing because you'll just be disappointed.
Yeah.
It's a bad episode.
Yeah, you can totally skip it.
Totally skip it. There's nothing of importance happens. Even the introduction of Guyan is forgettable.
Yeah, they don't say who she is or what she's there. You just know she's the bartender on this bar you've never seen before. So if you see another episode, it's just like, oh, that's a bar I've never seen before.
With that character we've never really met before.
Yeah, was there some kind of introduction to this place? And the answer will be no.
No.
No, there was not.
No, it's just assumed that it's been there the whole time. Right. And maybe it has been there the whole time, and we just haven't walked in yet. But then maybe we should have Guinan come in and be like, hey, I'm here to run the bar. Mm-hmm. Picard, I used to know you back in the day.
Right.
Like, some sort of decent introduction of this soon-to-be major character.
Yep.
But instead, even Pulaski. Like,
yeah.
All of it is so poorly executed, it's frustrating as a big Star Trek fan to watch this episode. So, yeah, leave it in the holster.
I agree.
Ugh. Man, I'm sorry, dude.
Yeah, that's all right.
We got it. This is what we're doing.
Bad. Yeah.
We're sitting through every episode.
As I've said before, I agreed to do this.
You did. And, you know, I hope you've had some fun outside of this episode.
You know, part of the mission of Starfleet is that you can't choose where you're assigned. You only go where they tell you.
Man.
Sometimes you get put on a pleasure planet where everyone is just having fun and is very fit and healthy, but then you fall down on a flower bed and they execute you. That's what this episode was.
Being executed.
Being executed by the fascist pleasure planet police on planet Edo.
That episode was much better than this one.
Yeah, and it wasn't even a very good one.
No, that was an average episode.
It was an average episode. This was a pretty bad one.
It was just a pointless episode. I hate when nothing happens.
Yep.
It drives me crazy. And I've been watching Voyager a lot recently, and Voyager's got a lot of duds in it, in my opinion.
That's what I've heard.
But this is worse than any Voyager episode I've seen to date, and I'm like 2 seasons in. I've been watching, you know, Deep Space Nine, all of them. I'm trying to be more Star Trek worldly for when we have these conversations, and this is probably the worst piece of Star Trek I've seen in a long time.
It's not as bad as Code of Honor, but
it's
less entertaining.
Exactly. So it's boring and makes no sense. Code of Honor is insulting and offensive.
Yeah.
And makes little sense, but at least it invoked a response out of
me. Right. At least it's like bad and entertaining. It's like Mystery Science Theater bad.
Right, exactly.
This was just like TV I'd rather skip bad.
Yeah. Why did anyone agree to make this thing? Because there were no decent writers hanging out.
Yeah, they're all on strike.
Yeah. All right, Patrick. Well, is there anything you want to talk about before we get out of here?
Yeah, keep listening to the show. If you are, thank you. If you have a little spare time, please give us a rating on iTunes. It helps us to show up in the ranks a little better, and we'll get more people to listen to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I've got another show, Politicked Off, with me and other Peaches and Hot Sauce writer Zach Mast. It's kind of a parody of NPR morning news shows. We do it every week, just like this one, so check that one out, too.
Awesome. And yeah, please listen to Making New Friends. It's a podcast I've been doing for a long time. Episodes come out kind of sporadically, but I hit 4 of them a month at least. That's always my personal goal. And follow me on Twitter at PatLikesToTweet because Facebook is for noobs.
Let's see what's out there.
Peaches. Hot sauce. Peaches.